Hey, bitch! It's time for the book club.
Warning, spoilers ahead.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Campfire Gaming Podcast. This episode is an extra special, and by extra, I mean extra special episode, because not only is it a book club episode, we are also welcoming back the one, the only, Mike. Mike, how are you doing?
A little sad now. You didn't even get like a, well, you didn't like... You didn't even give us, like, a deep welcome to the campers. It was just like, hey, campers, we're here. Like, what kind of counselor are we for not being like, welcome, campers? Right?
There you go. We've missed you. We've missed you. Rich and I just could not fill the shoes that you left whenever, you took some time off. So, but welcome, campers, to another Campfire Gaming Podcast. Is that a little better for you?
It sounded like you were going to, like... cut off my skin and wear it in the basement on that okay. one. But I'll let you go. It was great, Matt. Keep it up.
Yeah, that maybe feeds into the theme of the game we played. Yeah. So this week's episode, we will be covering Alice Madness Returns, a kind of a twist to I guess after the books as far as Alice in Wonderland. So we'll be deep diving into that. But before we do, just want to quick shout out to our website, Campfire Gaming Podcast. Be sure to check that out, where you can find links to all our socials like Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, all the good stuff. And definitely our Discord. Come join us on Discord. We'd love to chat with you. We chat about games. We occasionally sometimes chat about sports. And we do a lot of shitting on Halo, just like on the podcast. So be sure to come check us out there.
That's kind of funny that I left at the time you guys started pooping on Halo. Like, it just, like, I had a baby, took up a whole bunch of my time here, but, like, every time before that, I was like, oh, Halo's dumb. And now you guys are like, Halo's stupid. Whether it's the TV show, I mean, it just crapped the bed. And I'm so happy to say I was right.
Yep, you were. You were. We had to defend it a little bit, you know, get the, you know.
Yeah.
But we're not talking Halo today. We are talking Alice Madness Returns. This game released in 2011. So, yeah, cool. It's what, about 11 years old? It kind of felt like it at times. But it's from the designer American McGee and published by Electronic Arts. It's about $20 wherever you pick it up, or if you have the one, the only Game Pass, you could play it for free.
Was that specific with EA Play?
I should say if you have Game Pass Ultimate, yes, right. If you have Ultimate, because then you get EA, EA Play or EA Ultimate, whatever it is, right? Where you can
EA Play
access the game. But without further ado, let's kick it off. I mean, this was kind of a wild adventure. As I mentioned before, this is, as I was doing a little bit of research, because technically Alice Madness Returns is the second game in the series. The first game's adventure has Alice picking up what sounded like roughly after through the book, Through the Looking Glass, which is, if I understand correctly, the second book of Alice in Wonderland. Now, have you read either of the books?
I have read the first book. That was actually the story for the past 4 or 5 weeks for my kids, just bedtime stories, mm-hmm. You know, part chapters a day as they fell asleep through it. But, we just got through that. I was gonna think about doing Through the Looking Glass, but I was like, it's really, it was written such a long time ago that the words get a bit chewy. It's the best way I can say it.
Well, what you should do, I don't know if she does it for Through the Looking Glass, but I had never read the books, and I've also never seen any of the Disney movies, new or the old animated one. So I was kind of curious, so I did buy it on Audible, and I had the one, the only Scarlett Johansson read it to me. It was fantastic. So the book was pretty good too. But.
I would definitely look at her through the looking glass. So if that's an option, we yep. got it.
So neither of us have read Through the Looking Glass, but
it I have sounds seen like the movie. Like yep. the latest movie, the Johnny Depp one and all that. But
does that continue on kind of her crazy adventures from the Adventures of Alice in Wonderland?
I don't know. It's been a while. It's so hard to follow. Gotcha. Yeah, I think I saw it in theaters, so it's been a while since I've had any input into that. But
in all fairness, Alice in Wonderland, I'm like, what am I listening to? It was quite the trip. I felt I needed some.
It's a story about being a child and having to like be on your own and make grown up decisions mm-hmm. and start relying on things and think for yourself. Kind of a feel to it, you know. Yep. So. Which that kind of carried through the theme of the game too. Like, mm-hmm. With this one specifically, anyways, like as you're traversing through it, you start to become more and more Alice again, as it were. Mm-hmm. But
yeah, so just a quick synopsis, and hopefully not a 15-minute Gears of War one, but American McGee's Alice, the first game that came out, I think it was in 2000. Kind of the thing that happened was Alice's family died in a house fire. And she for 10 years was kind of insane. And that's where the game kind of took on its twisted nature because she escaped to Wonderland, but it wasn't quite the same. It wasn't a happy place because she had like survivor's guilt and stuff like that. Right. And we see that into the second game here. Right now, she's saved Wonderland from the first game, but and she's out of the asylum. She's now helping in. I wrote it down here. I can't remember the Rutledge Asylum. Nope. That was where she was at. Shoot. Where was it? She was she's been helping a psychiatrist out and taking care of some kids is kind of where this game picks up. And we find out that not all is well in Wonderland shortly after that.
Yeah, I mean, she comes back into it and things are just not the same. There's like all kinds of things that are just not lined up the way that Wonderland feels like it should be. I mean, mm-hmm. the first clue is you take 10 steps and pick up a butcher's knife. Like that already is like, ah!
Yeah,
I don't remember that part, but
the Vorpal Blade, which actually I loved. It was such a fun little weapon. But yeah, no, it's the I think the story is this, the psychiatrist that she's working with, Dr. Angus Bumby, is kind of trying to help her through kind of deal with what was the previous 10 years in her family's fire. And she just kind of keeps. I guess there's something wrong still, and Angus Bumby is trying to get her to kind of forget it so she can get past it, but something inside her, and that's where, when she gets pulled into Wonderland, something's off. There, you know, something's, it's not the same Wonderland that she had just, you know, from the previous game, or from the books, it's not this wonderful place anymore. It's starting to get a little twisted, and she finds, like, a knife, and that's, like, I don't know. I thought it was cool just having her run around and slash things up with that.
Did you ever fall off the cliff swinging your knife?
Oh, God. Yeah, dodging around and swinging the knife. Yeah. No, I mean, so this game is only about 11 years old. And I will say one of the I really enjoyed playing through it, but it wasn't without its quirks. And it was. Some of the movement, some of the fighting, where you're just kind of locked in and you just slide and next thing you know, you're off the edge. Or the jumping was kind of clunky. I got used to it pretty quick.
Who the hell picked a platformer for me to play? A 3D platformer, because I'm pretty good at the 2D ones. But who picked a 3D platformer with so much jumping for me to deal with? It's like the bane of any game I've played with you. It's just been 3D platforming. Yep. I can't do it.
In all fairness, when we knew Rich would be out because he's moving and stuff, and I was asking if you could come, I said, hey, you picked the game, so you're the one that picked this game.
I did. I forgot how much platforming this was, and just to get into that, like some of those jumps were so clunky, or like it would eat the inputs on like a double jump and you would just sail off to your death. You had to be precise with sloppy controls, and that just kills me in a in a platforming game like this. And then I didn't die falling off an edge when I wasn't jumping, except for right at the end. Right towards the end of the game, one of the last fights, there's like two giant dolls, the dude in the middle, and the platform drops down, and it's like that square, and then there's the baby bitches, were they called?
I think so. Yeah, they were
floating around. So I slashed myself right off the edge, and I was like, really? Yeah. I just need to cut myself off and die. But
no, yeah. It was definitely the jumping was, I think, the hardest thing for. Well, no, I take that back. Actually, the targeting kind of started bugging me late in the game, right? As you'd imagine, the game gets harder as you go along, and they start throwing you. They had a unique variety, not only in just their design, but the attacks of a lot of the enemies. And when I would try to it was sometimes hard to prioritize, you know, like, hey, I want to take out this guy first or this monster or whatever first. But the targeting was weird, and then the camera, especially if you're in tight places.
That camera was brutal. There were some times where I was like, who made this? I'm going to find you. This is a terrible camera angle. I just want to shake it. No, it was the targeting. I found like the pepper shaker was probably the best weapon in the game by the end of it for me, because you could really move around with that one, and the camera didn't get too bad. But that was a fun little toy.
But yeah, no, I really enjoyed it, and yet I kind of just got used to it, the jumping and the targeting. But for an 11-year-old game, I was kind of surprised at how rough it was.
Well, I heard a lot of the same things with the first one, with just American McGee's Alice, that you couldn't even jump diagonally, like it was straight lines. You had to adjust yourself in a way that you could only jump straight lines, not diagonal to other platforms, which is precision jumping makes that impossible.
It's only like straight up and down or kind of like arc. It was so weird because one of the kind of neat things, and if any listeners want to go do this, if you pick it up, I think most copies now come with a free copy built into the game of America's McGee's Alice, right? So I beat this game and I was like, I don't know, I had a lot of fun. Let me go try this out. I booted it up and I think I made 10 or 15 minutes. But it got to the jumping, right? And I wasn't even to any crazy platforming. It was just trying to jump to different platforms just in the base level or the start level, right? And it was just like, I was like, no, I can't do this. But I was curious of the story. So I went out to YouTube and just Googled, you know, America McGee's Alice story or whatever. And yeah, but no, it's definitely rough. Now, Alice Madness Returns jumping was much better.
Way better.
Still a little clunky, but much better.
They improved. I think the thing about this game, and we can get into the plot a little more here shortly, I think, but the thing about this game is it wasn't the gameplay that was just amazing. Like, it was a good game. It was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. But, like, the visuals, the worlds, those were so neat and so kind of disgusting. Like, the character models and things like, it just felt icky. It did not feel like everything that you've grown to know about, like, Wonderland. All of a sudden, there's, like, this icky multi-piece Hatter puppet thing. And he's disgusting and, you know, bulbous in the wrong areas, super tall and thin in others. And it's just, you know, and all the levels, you know, matched really, really well with, like, the theme of each of the sections. So I think controls and stuff aside, that really helped to lift or elevate this game into what it was.
Yeah, this is no kids game, you know, fun little, like we said, you know, just, you know, a little girl trying to, you know, learning to grow up and make, you know, she is, but yeah, like we said, the all is not right in Wonderland. And to your point, all the levels were just the art design and the variety. And you could even say that about the different monsters. Now, there were some monsters that kind of were the same throughout. Those were those like black gooey ones. What were they called? The different ruin. The what do we got here? Insidious, slithering, menacing, driving, you know, colossal. All these different ruin, these kind of black goo things. It always had like baby doll faces. which kind of hinted at what the end boss ended up being and kind of leading it to kind of what the story was about and what Alice discovers along the way. But yeah, it was just this American McGee guy is just pretty creative and yeah, some pretty unique levels. But well, let's jump into story. We talked about story, and we mentioned that she was helping out at the whatever the Houndditch's home for, you know, troubled kids, I think, or something like that, right? Helping out, the psychiatrist is trying to get her to forget about her past so she can kind of whatever. But yeah, she jumps into Wonderland. She meets Cheshire Cat, which, by the way, I got to mention, I love Cheshire Cat. He was pretty awesome. But is it just me, or did he not sound like Alan Rickman?
He did sound very much like Alan Rickman.
I looked it up because I thought, well, maybe it actually is him, but it wasn't.
Who did the voice in the movies? Do you know?
I'm not sure. I don't know if they're the same, but yeah, no. So the Cheshire Cat kind of, he's there along the way through your journey, kind of dropping hints and kind of pointing out strange things to you with whatever, either the characters that you're interacting with in the level or just some different things with your memories of the fire.
Right.
And, but yeah, I mean, you go through this level here, and it's kind of, it's your basic tutorial, but it kind of starts out nice, Wonderland, just weird, but slowly gets messed up. And we see that with the different insidious ruins or whatever it was I mentioned, that kind of appear out, these goopy, black goopy things that start attacking you.
Those like weird goopy baby dolls were so weird. Like, I just don't know, like, it makes sense getting to the end of the game why mm-hmm. they were there. But when you first see them, I was like, what the hell is that? I don't, like, how does that tie into this Wonderland theme? Like, what frickin' baby dolls were involved? It's like, am I in Dead Space? Do I have little baby dolls crawling at me now? What happened? Why is this here? So it was kind of weird and pulled me out a little bit of the experience. And I wonder if that was intentional.
I think it was that subtle hinting, because if you think every little level, like we kind of went through an area that was a bunch of like teapots and stuff, and we got these little Mad Hatter monster guys, right? Each level kind of had their uniquely designed monsters, but the common monster across all the levels were some form or all forms, I guess, when you get towards the end of these ruined creepy monsters, these baby black goo. Yeah. Which again, I think kind of led to the little hints of what happens at the end. And I promise we'll talk about the craziness of the ending, but yeah, no, it was just kind of, I thought it was cool that you go through this nice lush kind of, what was it called? Vale of Tears area. And what you find out, and ironically, I didn't really put these two and two together until I did the, audiobook of The Adventures of Alice in Wonderland. You start meeting characters from the books, and what I found out after watching the story of American McGee's Alice is you also meet a lot of these characters are like boss battles or bad people from the first game. So like you meet people like the Duchess, and like you mentioned the Mad Hatter, and those were two kind of boss battles in the first game, because they were on the I think the main enemy of the first game was the Red Queen, right?
Yep. I mean, that's the main antagonist in most of the Alice in Wonderland stories. Mm-hmm. If I recall correctly, it was in the first one, it was the Red Queen was, you know, being a jerk to everybody, trying to cut off Alice's head for not being a witness for her, about the king trying to steal her heart or some crap like that. And so you had to go and stand up to the queen. And that's the book side. I think through the Looking Glass, there was like a dragon being summoned by the Red Queen.
Was it a Jabberwocky?
I think it was Smaug. I'm not sure.
Smaug? Okay, Smaug. Okay. Yeah, this is, you do run across Bilbo and Frodo in this too, so.
The Bagginses.
Yeah. No, the reason I asked about this Jabberwocky, because that was one of the main almost dragon, I didn't quite understand it from the first game, which, again, what I liked, again, I didn't play the first one, but after watching the story of it. I like the different callbacks that they did to the previous game, because when you get your Vorpal Blade, you actually, to you and me who never played the first game, I was just like, oh, it's some weird dead monster, right? It was this, it was actually the skeletal remains of this Jabberwocky monster you kill in the first game. So it's kind of an interesting how they,
and that is the monster in the Looking Glass one.
Okay, so there you go.
Cool. It ties it all in. That's good to know.
Yeah. Yeah, they definitely did their homework. I mean, you know, for this to kind of tie things from Adventures of Alice in Wonderland and through the Looking Glass. And then again, kind of carry it in through the first game into the second game as well. But
I don't know about American McGee's Alice and Through the Looking Glass as a book, but I know that like Alice in Wonderland was fairly short. Like it was pretty compressed into these sections. And I think mm-hmm. the game really followed along those same sections. So I'm not sure if they all kind of have that same pattern, but it was nice to see it. It was for me, knowing the book, it was nice to see it relating in the same direction as the book kind of followed. So you're yep. able to like stick into like, oh, cool. Oh, I wonder if I'm going to meet this person. When does that happen? Well, that happens about and then you get a few levels in. You're like, oh, there they are. That yeah. squirrely little mouse.
Yeah, that poor, what is it, Dormouse or whatever it was? Yeah. That sleepy Dormouse? Yeah, that poor guy. Well, yeah, it's actually, he's part of this level here. So, yeah, but I mean, you get your Vorpal Blade, you get your Pepper, was it Pepper Shooter thingy?
It's a Pepper here. Grinder.
Pepper Grinder, which I really enjoyed that weapon too. I mean, those were, you end up getting two other weapons along the way, but I upgraded the Pepper Grinder and the Vorpal Blade, like, right away. Like, all, you know, maxed out.
But, yeah, I went straight Vorpal Blade, didn't even put any teeth into anything else, which is, that's how you paid for upgrades, you walked around the level collecting teeth.
Yeah.
Not sure where that's from, but that was part of it.
I didn't get that one, I didn't get that reference either, but yeah, it was, I guess all the levels had kind of a lot of, like, the currency was, yeah, your teeth, and that's what you used to upgrade. You also had a bunch of other collectibles throughout the levels, which really a lot of them were you would find little houses along the way, which would help fill in the story of what actually happened the night of the fire.
All the memories.
All the memories there. Then you had things like, I didn't quite get the bottles. There was some bottles you collect, but those didn't have audio tied to them. There were some, what was it? There was some glasses, which then you find out more of your sister, which I forget, what was her name?
Lizzie,
and a little bit more about Lizzie and Dr. Bumby. You know, it's kind of, he'll be reoccurring theme. Spoiler. So, like, I thought it was a lot of fun, like, kind of getting that story along the way. The only downside with doing some more of the, because you find out a lot in those houses and the glasses, you find out a lot about the story. So I really enjoyed, and I think I collected, I'd miss like one or two in a level for each level. But if people didn't go out of their way to explore a lot of these areas, you would miss a lot of that and kind of miss out on some of the story and might not quite get it, you know, the ending and what happened with the fire and Dr. Bumby. So I was kind of, it was fun for me, but if people are just trying to get through the game and not exploring a lot, they could miss some of this.
They can, but I think the Queen of Hearts area, I think it kind of really ties everything together to where it's a point to where you can understand what happened. Because that, I mean, I don't want to go to it yet unless you want to talk about it now, but that little cutscene about the, like, you know, the key and the door lock and things like that, where she like noticed something that, wait a minute, the cat jumped out the window instead of, you know, knocking over the lantern. You know, at that point, I think you can immediately put it together that this thing happened without all of the backstory.
Yeah. Know?
So at least they do give you like a summary right at the end of like, this is what actually happened in case you missed all of the things. But those little memories going along, they like, you didn't necessarily get an answer out of them, but you got like inquiries and like little tidbits of information, and then Alice would start to like question the memories while you're walking through it, and you could get some really like cool like who stands to gain from all of me and my family dying.
Because the idea was her cat had knocked over something in the library, which had her dad was a amateur photographer, so it had all these like chemicals and started the fire in the library and everybody died. But yeah, you don't necessarily have to find these memories to understand the story. I just felt they added a lot more, I guess, made me understand it a little bit more by the end. But yeah, you know, those, what is it? Each level, like about roughly halfway through, you'd come across a door, just random door in the middle of somewhere. And then you'd walk through.
The flaming
door? Yeah, the flaming door. And that those did a very good job of kind of tying some of those memories together and kind of slowly, because you, yeah, I think it's like the first door you find out like, oh, I forget her cat's name. Her cat was actually in the room with her. So she wasn't downstairs to knock over the lamp. And then, yeah, like each door kind of, you get a little bit more. You find out like, oh, Lizzie didn't die in the fire. She was on the other side of the house. And when they found her, she was dead, not burned alive. So, but yeah.
Yeah, it, I don't know. As you get further into seeing like the screwed upness of what actually happened, like it's rather neat. So,
go ahead.
Oh, go for it. Go, go.
No, I was just going to say, yeah, the first level kind of ends off where you actually end up helping put the Mad Hatter back together. Cause from the previous game, you didn't kill him, but you basically dismembered him. So, which again, kind of leads more into some of the twisted stuff was some part of finding his legs and his arms was going to the Dormouse and the hare?
Yep.
Or something like that.
The Dormouse were.
But they were all like messed up because in the previous game, again, I didn't know this until I watched a little video, was the Mad Hatter was experimenting on him. So they're all like, yeah, it was really
like
weird.
Dormouse is in like a wheelchair and the he's rabbit got, like, wasn't quite right. Yeah.
But yeah.
I thought I was going to have to fight him as soon as I put him back together. I thought it was going to be a double cross. I was like, oh, dang it. But then he helps you out. Like, it was kind of a weird like reassembling of your happy space in Wonderland, right? Slowly but surely, in all of the blood and gore, reestablishing order within Wonderland. So,
But I mean, we put him. I thought he was going to double cross us too, but at the end, he ends up going to because he was going to. The whole thing you find out to start a level is, or start in this first level, is that there's some train coming through and that's helping to destroy Wonderland. And he was going to try to get you there so you could hop on the train and figure out what's going on. You miss the train, unfortunately. And then you're just, you know, some of the cutscenes. I really enjoyed, by the way, how they did a lot of the cutscenes with the art and the storytelling.
Oh, were they? Went to that like 2D cardboard style.
Yeah.
Look to it. Yeah, it was really nice.
Because you get to it, you miss the train, and then what was it? Like you end up drowning in tea, and then you're back in London, right? Yep. You know, you're out of Wonderland.
Did you have any glitches with those cutscenes? I lost a few. Like, I didn't press anything, I didn't do anything. It just, as it was going to like load the cutscene, it like just loaded and then cut. It's like the FMV was just like boop, gone. And I was like, huh, well, that's weird. I guess I don't need to know what happened.
Yeah.
And then I'm there.
I don't
It was abrupt think... too. Like I knew it was like a glitch or a bug because it was just a big abrupt shift.
No, I don't think I had any issues with crashes or cutscenes ending. But yeah.
How did you make the second area? Second area was Fishtown? Was that with the walrus and the carpenter? Or was that third
level? Yeah, which was, again, kind of just, again, demented. That was you work your way through, you meet the turtle from the books. I'm forgetting what he's called, of something. Mock Turtle.
Yep, Mock right? Turtle.
You help him get his shell and I'm sorry, you get to a ship and you're underwater this whole time, which is again kind of unique and fun, and you're bouncing on like jellyfish looking things, you get to that what was it, that town? What was it, Barrel Bottom? You get in there and I think it was what it's called, Barrel Bottom here, and it's like just super nice, you know, all these fish and stuff, and the carpenter and the walrus want to put on a play, and obviously you get recruited to help them find some stuff.
That was probably my least favorite level gameplay wise. I enjoyed the scenery, I enjoyed the concept behind it, the characters, and like what actually happened. But that whole area just felt like run, go grab the thing, come back, run, go grab the thing, come back. It didn't feel as like linear and like you were progressing. Mm-hmm. As like the Hatter or the Queensland area,
yep,
or things like that. It just, this one felt like it was over repetitive.
It definitely did. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, you're fine. No, I was just trying to figure like the music note parts where you had to go hunt down like the composer and all the songs. It was really just go into a room, fight a guy, go in a room, fight a guy. I just really wanted that section to be over when I played through it. But I did enjoy like the whole concept of you had to put together all of the actors. You had to put together the music. You had to find all of the things for the carpenter and the walrus to put on this play. And then shit just hits the fan.
Yeah. And like, I thought it was like, so you get to this town, you finally work your way, which by the way, I do kind of agree. It was probably my least favorite. It was like, it was a cool idea that you're underwater, but I know a good bit of the early part there, it was kind of bland as you're kind of getting to Barrel Bottom. Then you got more of the coral stuff. You got this weird fish town. But yeah, when you help the carpenter out and you bring, what was it, you had to get some fish or something to write a music, and then some
singer.
You had
to get a script, you had to get a music, and you had to get the performers.
Yeah,
and then pretty much the same exact thing on repeat.
Yeah, but it was like, as you're getting back to the town, you're coming in it from like the lower level of it, right? And like I remember that we were playing this kind of, you know, roughly at the same this level at the same time, and I sent you a screenshot of the just as you're coming back into town, all these fish are dead, and they're like cut open and nailed to the bottom, like posts that are holding up the houses above, and it's just piles of dead fish.
it was just so gruesome.
Yeah,
it looked like a scene from 300 when they were on their way to go like fight at the Hot Gates or whatever. It was like dead bodies built up into the shape of a tree, like just tacked to posts, and I was like, what do I have to get into now?
Yeah.
No, go for it. I was going to talk about the boat part.
Go ahead.
It's all the little 2D boat adventure. I wish that would have been a little bit longer. In the grand scheme of things, I felt like it was pretty short.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish I could just go back to that point to get the achievement for not getting hit, because I only got hit once. I got hit one time, and it was my own dumb fault.
I think I might have got hit twice, but yeah, I didn't get hit like at all. The whole game is basically platforming, but we should also mention, like, throughout the game, they had all these weird little puzzles like this 2D, you know, side scrolling, you get to drop, drop some bombs and shoot some cannons. And I thought it was kind of a nice way to mix things up. And they even had the little couple times they used the musical note thing where it was just, you press the buttons to make a note, maybe that's where Guitar Hero was way before that, but similar type thing, just timing
that part
the button.
I don't know what it was. That part just kind of like bothered me too. By the time I got to like my 10th slide puzzle, I was like, I'm done with these. Yeah. This is,
I mean, the good thing is
something a little bit harder, maybe.
I think that was the thing too, is like, yeah, so they had those weird, I don't know what you call those puzzles where it's a 3x3 and you slide the little squares around to try to complete. Is that okay? Slide puzzle. Yeah. I'm so smart, but,
you basically described it as its name. The puzzle where you slide stuff.
Yeah, the where you move blocks and you move them around. Yep. Yeah, but I mean, luckily none of them were hard, like at all. It was just like four moves and you were done. You had to be kind of really bad at it to kind of mess it up. But no, I thought it was really cool that they kind of sprinkled those some of those different things. You got the different, was it the pawns you moved around when you got to the Queensland? So. It was pretty fun that they kind of, I thought it was pretty fun that they sprinkled those in.
I think the chess one was the hardest one of all of them. I think it was like the third or fourth chess puzzle that you got into when they added the knights
that moved. Knights.
That's where it got like actually challenging. I was like, ooh, I like this. But the other ones were just, I felt really light on content. Like, as far as puzzles go, I know it was a platformer, right? But when they added those little pieces of puzzles, it's just like, oh, come on, make it just a little bit harder.
Gotcha. So not a huge fan of the, what'd you call it, slide puzzle?
Slide
the moving
puzzles.
Blocks around to make a picture. But yeah, so I guess, you know, what is it? We finally helped the carpenter and the walrus out. And like, shit hits the fan. Like, it was just all a big trick to get all these fish into the theater, and what were they were like oysters or something, the singers, right? Just so the walrus could
eat them,
murdering and eating
just
them.
Just starts ow. I was like, oh no.
Yeah, I was just, again, just messed up, but it was hilarious. Yeah, those oyster starlets that, you know, when the walrus came in and just squashed a bunch and then just started throwing them in his mouth. Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
But I think the way that kind of gets stopped is the corrupted train ends up kind of arriving and kind of breaking all that up. And then as you see kind of between each levels, you get kind of knocked back out to London again, right? And, you know, you kind of wander around a little bit until something triggers you again. Yeah, I think they kind of fed into the story a little bit, but I did kind of find it weird most of the times you were out in London, right? Because they were never, there's never anything to it other than kind of just follow a linear path to until you got to like a character or something that caused you to start tripping balls, and then you're back in Wonderland.
Follow the shining kitty until he gets you to whatever it was.
The kitty, or was it, we went to the, what was it?
The pigeons with the bird lady.
What was the mangled mermaid?
Hey.
Yeah. Yeah, it was the pigeons.
That
was
so gross.
Yeah. It was the pigeons was, you met, some old lady, which was like some nurse or something at the asylum while you were there, right? All these characters you kind of meet in London in some way or the other was involved, whether they were like a doctor that saw you or took care of you in the asylum, or like your, I think, was it old Nan or something, or Nan Sharp was like your nanny or something while you were with your pet, right?
Did they tie into the characters? Because I know like Tweedledee and Tweedledum were in the asylum, like when you were walking through that, when you were all straitjacketed.
Yeah, that was a I think callback to the previous game, because those were two of the bosses in the previous game. So, but I don't think anybody, and I could be maybe just not interpreting something correctly, I don't think there was really ever like, it wasn't like, oh yeah, like Nan Sharp was the walrus or something, right? Represent, you know, I don't, again, maybe I just wasn't smart enough to pick up on that, but I didn't feel like there was ever.
The body shapes of like the nurse looked a lot like the Hatter, right? Mm-hmm. And then Tweedledee and Tweedledum are obviously the two like brutes at the asylum. I don't know who else would have been who, but
yeah. But yeah, no, so it's just
the big prostitute lady, would that have been the lady with the bakery stuff right at the beginning there? Who gives you the pepper shooter?
Oh, the Duchess?
Yeah.
Maybe?
Yeah, I think they all kind of tie into someone. I just don't know.
Yeah, because
how
she was,
and or who.
Yeah, that she was the that was the Duchess from not only the book, but again another boss from the previous game. Could be, maybe.
Could be. I like to think that it is, and I'm just going to go with it, and you can't stop me.
That's fine. That's fine. And we got into, I don't know if this level, there was only six chapters. And technically, last chapter is one of those real short, kind of basically boss levels.
Yeah, it's like a boss, five chapters and an epilogue.
But I really enjoyed the art and styles of the next three levels. And I don't know if I like the third or fourth level's art better, but the third one is you get dropped into, you know, after something crazy happens, you get dropped into like kind of, I think it was kind of a, it was when, and you see this towards the end of the game as well. Alice starts kind of her London. It was like 1800s, 1880 or 90 or something like that. World starts kind of meshing a little bit more with Wonderland. Because that was, if you remember, the start of that was the first level or the start of that level is where you were kind of there was some London and then it kind of turned into like a demented, corrupted, you know, Wonderland.
Yeah.
And then you start smoking some strange pipe and you turn into some real small chick that goes to an Oriental. What, Oriental Grove?
Yeah, that was a neat area. I personally laughed my rear end off when I saw the samurai bee, the samurai wasps, specifically to the fact that they were wearing jackets. They were yellow jackets, which is another term for the type of bee. I lost it. I was like, oh my god, that's so clever, yellow jackets.
Yeah, like the idea of this level is like you're trying to meet your way or get your way to the caterpillar.
Yep.
Again, the broken record here, but a friend from the first game. But like, yeah, that whole, like, as you're working through it, you're going through these towns, which were, there were these origami ants that were at war with, they were really getting slaughtered by these origami samurai wasps and stuff. But yeah, it was just, they were kind of, again, it was that kind of unique enemy for the levels, which kind of, again, added to it. You still got those ruined monsters, which, by the way, how did you like, I think it was the Colossal Ruin? Those guys were...
Is that the grabby one, or is that
the... That was the real big one that had, I think, was this...
The ones that looked, it looked like a caterpillar. You could, like...
Yeah.
It had, like, six bottom legs, and then it, like, would blow fire and chase you.
You had to shoot all the baby heads off its body, and then it, like... And then it would start spitting fire and chase you and try to grab you. And then it would get tired and a big baby head would come out and you had to beat that till it died.
So if I think, noticed when it was chasing you, if you noticed that big baby head popped out then, and that's when you're supposed to turn and hit it quick so that it would like stun and drop. Yeah. I accidentally found out a trick to that boss that made it much easier.
Yeah, you just put some object between you and it and run in a circle.
Nope. Shrink.
Okay.
If you shrink, the fire goes right over top of you, the angle of it. And I tried to dodge, and I picked up the game again after not playing for a couple days. So I hit the wrong button to dodge, and I shrunk. He can't grab you because you're too little. Like, you're too itty-bitty for him to reach you. Like, he sits there and tries, and the fire arcs right over. So you can just run with him, like, at his same pace. And dodge it that way, and then, you know, you can turn and shoot, and he falls over, and you just beat him with the horse stick, which was one of my favorite weapons towards the end.
Yeah. No, I didn't know you could do that. But that brings up a point of something we didn't chat about. Early on in the game, you come across this random potion, and you just drink it, you know? I think that's in the theme
as
of
Alice. Does.
Yep. Just like you eat, what is it, cake at some point, and different things, right?
Oh, but this that potion, was so much fun.
What I liked about the idea of the potion thing was it was just one of your normal things you could do. There wasn't like it ran out or you needed to keep collecting them. But what was nice was, yeah, one, it helped in certain areas because you had to get small to get through different places. But it also revealed things like secrets and sometimes little signs and things to help direct you for collectibles or basically little images of like, hey, monsters ahead, essentially. I really thought it was kind of a, or I guess a lot of the platforming was done because a lot of the platforms were only visible when you were, I don't know what you want to call that, shrunken vision, right?
Yep.
It gets all purple and then you can see certain things.
So I didn't notice the like little paintings on the wall until like the third or fourth level. I think it was in the Oriental Grove, somewhere in the middle. I didn't notice the little paintings that weren't just to like show you where the next area to go or whatever else, but there was like warnings, as you were saying, on the wall of like monsters ahead of this kind. And I am now wondering how much that I missed in the previous like three stages, because it was like, holy crap, this is a lot of information.
Mm-hmm.
If I would have just hit the button and gone a little slower around some of these parts. So it's really kind of neat, the little like, what it's like blacklight drawings basically all over
essentially,
the level.
Yeah.
Just super cool.
Yeah, no, it was, it, yeah, to your point, there was, I mean, they were kind of all over the place because they were one of the I got in the habit where like I'd fight people or I'd be walking through a larger area and I would just constantly hit the button to shrink down. Okay. And he's like, okay, turn, shrink down. Like, because it's one of the best ways to find a lot of the hidden stuff in the level, like the pig snouts, which reveal, you know, sometimes some of the memories you can collect or just some extra teeth that you can use.
Some of them are just empty. Did you get a couple empties? I was so mad about that.
Really?
Shoot one down and then I go like scoop up the like, chop of the basket, it explodes and there's nothing. And I was like,
oh, really?
Aww.
Well, let's back up. I think we both played this on the same system. I did this on the Series X. Did you?
So did what, I.
Is yep. That is so weird that we kind of had, that you had some issues and I didn't really, yeah. I mean, there were some baskets that only gave like one or two, it seemed like.
Yeah, no, it's just maybe you missed these baskets and I'm just a better player and found more pig snouts.
Hey. What was cool was in the main menu, you could see how much you've collected with just one run through. I got 98% complete. So I think I got quite a bit. So
maybe I got the 2% that you didn't.
Yeah, there you go.
Because I did not do a good job on anything except the red flower, like the red painting, the red rose stuff. I got a lot of those.
Yeah, so. I guess why you bring that up, that was kind of one of the other, I guess you could call it collectible. So Alice's health was little roses, right? And you kind of got them when you killed people or found objects that you smashed in the world. That's how you healed. Or the little purple flowers that you shrunk down into and it kind of covered you. But they had these, was it radula rooms? I'm saying that wrong, probably. But
I wouldn't know how to pronounce that.
Did you find all 16?
No. I think I got 9 or 10.
Gotcha.
I want to say.
Did you like the challenges? So basically they were hidden throughout the level and when you get to them, they were kind of these big, almost seashell or snail shell looking things you walk into. And then there was some sort of challenge.
I felt like most of those challenges were just stay alive, kill everything else.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's, no, I wish there would have been a little more to it.
It seemed like typically I found them all. I'm patting myself in the back over here. It always seemed like the first room in a level that you found was always trivia, right? And you'd go to the, what do we call it? The Vale of Tears. And then you'd be transported there. Cheshire Cat would give you a riddle and you'd solve it. Right. Then the second and fourth one were always that kind of either kill enemies or stay alive while the hare and was it the hare and the dormouse were kind of like they're massive giant things looking down at you on this little platform that you fought on.
Yep. It was kind of funny with the trivia ones. Jamie was like, how did you know the answer to that? I was like, well, I listened to what he said. And if you look at the answers, only some of them make sense for what to say back. Like, I don't know. But
no, they were fun. I enjoyed it. But the third room, it seemed like that in a level that I would find would be kind of themed to the level. So like the second level with all the underwater stuff, you did that ship thing and you had to survive that. We didn't quite touch on it yet, but in the Oriental level, part of what you do is as far as trying to find the caterpillar, you go into paintings and it's this kind of 2D side scroller. And that was the third rooms challenge in the Oriental level. So I think some of the I didn't really have a lot of problems with the Radulo room challenges, except for I think it was the second room I ever found, which was kill all the enemies. But the enemies they gave you just, again, it was just kind of a good combination to be annoying. And it was the, right. What was it? The iPods, which I thought was kind of a fun enemy.
They and were then the, so hard at the beginning of the game.
Yeah. And then the menacing ruins, right? Because it was the teapots or the iPods would shoot a bunch of hot tea at you. And the menacing ruins, you had to destroy the three baby faces on their chest, but they had like doll arms that would cover it up if you try to hit them or shoot them. So you had to wait for them to throw fireballs at you to ricochet
them with an umbrella.
With your umbrella, which was, it was all really cool, but it was just having two or three of those iPods. And I think it was like two of those menacing ruins. It was just trying to like, you know, you're trying to whittle away at some of them. That was the only one I had trouble with because it was like, I need to get in here and get rid of the iPods. Because those would be the, in my thought, was the easiest to kill
faster,
first.
Faster, easier, yeah.
Because you just had to shoot them with the pepper grinder in the eye, then they'd kind of be stunned, and you go stab them in the eye in their iPod. And, but again, the whole time we had the two menacing ruins, like throwing fireballs or charging, and it was just frustrating. But yeah, it was a good time.
You keep saying iPod, and Apple's going to go into the tea business.
Yeah. Tea or something else.
Your wireless iPod.
Yeah. iPod.
iPod.
But yeah, no, I thought it was a good touch. And basically, if, as you said, painting the rose or whatever the collectible was when you collected four pieces, you got an extra heart of or rose of health. So I thought it was a fun, again, little touch, kind of a little different than everything you were doing.
I didn't,
kind of adding some variety.
I didn't put it together that you got extra health from them. I had no idea. I was like, oh, I have extra health. I wonder why. Maybe it's because I beat a level. I don't know.
Yeah. No, when you collected it, when you completed four of those rooms, you got an extra rose of health. So
I can tell you for the final boss, I could have definitely used those damn health.
Oh, yeah. Let me talk. Yeah, we'll get to that. But let's get So you get to Caterpillar, and what was kind of fun along the way was you had to go in these paintings to work your way up the mountain. And in there was a bunch of, you know, story. But I thought it was really cool because of the side-scrolling kind of aspect to it. It was really neat.
I got frustrated in a few spots. I'm trying to remember. There was a spot where the, like, bee archers were hanging out.
Mm-hmm.
And you had to, like, time your jumps. But if you didn't land in the right spots, you were dead no matter what you did because it was the timing was location. It was location-based, not timing on some of them. Mm-hmm. So if you would have to time one, but land in the perfect spot in the other not to get hit. And if you got hit, you were just dead in that area. It was just a one-shot kill. And it was like, with the control issues that I had, it was so difficult just getting to that one little tiny corner of the tree or the house so that you could hop up to the next one. And I finally did it, and then I fell off the other side. I was so angry.
I didn't have so much trouble there, but as far as that kind of weird platforming, I know some of the levels where there was stuff like lava or that kind of, if it was frustrating sometimes for me because there was times where I'd be floating over it and I didn't think I'd touch it, but apparently I did. And then it was just not, it wasn't like, oh, you just lose some roses of health. It was, you're dead. Now the good thing is I did feel like the checkpoints were pretty forgiving in this. It was never really like, oh no, I got to go play a huge chunk of this game.
No, it was like 10 steps back. It was never anything ridiculous, which was really nice.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's just part of, because of the design of the game and the way that some of it was clunky, they were a little more forgiving in like the platforming aspect of it versus like in combat. I know a lot of those fights, if you died, like I died a lot in this game. You start over the entire fight. Like it didn't bring you middle of the fight, except for at the end. And that one we'll talk about again later.
So we get to the caterpillar, right? And basically he's underneath. He's actually starting to go into his cocoon to become a butterfly, which I think we see at the end level.
Yep. He's on the train.
But it, he kind of gives you the wisdom of, like, basically, if we're able to save Wonderland, we're essentially going to save ourselves in the sense that we're not going to slip back into this insanity, right? So, and then we're back out into London, because that's just the way the game worked. But yeah, it, I think
that's really where they start to form the opinion of, just like in the books, Alice needs to start making decisions for Alice and not be affected by who you're around and worried about what they're thinking and, you know, the norms of everything else, and start really taking care of Alice.
Well, I think this and then this next level is kind of where you start getting those characters that are like pointing out to Alice, like, you know what happened that night at the fire. Yeah. You're just having this guilt and whatever else where you're imagining things, because on the night of the fire, she saw, what was it, like a centaur, I think is what it was, early on, leaving her sister's room. And then obviously they're blaming the cat for doing it. But, you know, again, as we saw in the first, I think first or second level, the cat was in her room. You know, there was, we saw, I think that we end up seeing somebody leaving Lizzie's room. And yeah, like you pointed out, there was that key.
Yeah.
That he had. So again, it's slowly starting to be like, you know, we're piecing things together, and some of the characters in Wonderland are saying, hey, you know what's going on. Like, you know, like you said, start making decisions, start, you know, knowing that you know what went on, and stop trying to say, right, hey, you know, something else happened. But so yeah, so we end up back out, I think it was in jail. And we honestly, again, this was kind of where sometimes I felt the London parts were kind of just this one in particular, because you woke up in jail. There was a little conversation about, you were like, they locked you up because you were like screaming or yelling in the streets or something. And you literally just walk out of the station and then you're back in Wonderland. Like, it was just, I mean, so
they
short.
Let you out. They yeah, had a quick reason of like, hey, here you go. I think it was just to really interrupt the idea of what level you're in, and to start pressing that you're in a duality of worlds, that you're not just in Wonderland. Little bits, but we get of to, reality.
I think we get to your favorite level now, right?
The Queensland area was the, like, I hated the beginning of it. I was like, I hope this is not the whole frickin' level. This is gonna be frustrating. There's a lot of, like, issues that I took with the time-based buttons. So you got like little the hair bombs, like rabbit bombs. You could just drop them, remote bombs, wherever. You could blow them up. They also acted as a decoy. If you threw them out near enemies, they'd go attack the bunny instead of you.
Yep.
But any time that, and it wasn't just the first time, it was any time that you pressed a button, it would like move the camera over to what is actually happening. Like, what did the button do? And by the time you can start see, you can move during that time, but by the time you can start actually seeing where Alice is and make a direction, you know, because there was a lot of pits and things like that, you'd just die if you fell in. You'd lose, and I think it was like 15 seconds of your 60 second timer. I don't know if that was actually 60 seconds, but like, it was one quarter of the timer would go before the camera actually got back to you. And I measured it because I got frustrated. I was like, how much time is this actually taking? And
yeah,
it was one quarter of your bomber timer just to be able to like do the camera action. So you couldn't, some of those areas you just could not make a mistake. And I made 100 mistakes on that one little bridge where it was like the purple blocks to get to the other side. But you had to press one button with Alice, drop the bomb on the other button first, run across, and then get all the way across and down. And no matter what I did, the door was always like minimum halfway closed by the time I got to the other side. And it's a combination of like the mechanics, a combination of the camera stuff. And I finally just like teleported, because you could dodge by turning into butterflies. I just teleported through it, and it like sucked me through the wall, even though it was halfway down. So
it definitely, the those those like platform buttons you'd stand on and it would cause something to happen. I definitely struggled with that, the whole camera. That was definitely one of the kind of the complaints as I was saying with the camera, because yeah, it would shift a lot of times to keep you in perspective, or if the whatever you're trying to do was far away, the camera would travel to that and then back. Now, I did get in the habit of just standing on the button. I didn't put the rabbit down, or the bomb rabbit down.
That would have been smarter.
until like the camera was back and ready to go, right? And I had a second or two. But it still didn't always solve the problem, because a lot of times they would have those unique cameras for when you're standing on that platform. And then when you stepped away from it, it would zoom back down to you. And that was jarring sometimes,
yep.
You know, especially if you're trying to quickly jump and start doing platforming. But yeah, no, it was, I know the part you're talking about, and that took me a couple tries too. But one thing I did like about the start of that level is you're basically in the clouds. Platforms and castles are just randomly getting built out of nowhere, out of like cards, because you're in the Queensland. So there was like, yep, all these just playing cards. So I thought it was kind of, again, just leaning into that whole, the design of this game was just crazy cool and really fun, because then, yeah, so and this whole level in itself had just three different crazy stages where it was really up in the sky, bright and sunny, cards and kind of fun. And then you get into where the Queen's Executioner is chasing you, and that's kind of through like different dark hallways and kind of a, what was it, a hedgerow maze type stuff, yep, like that. And so we're starting to get back a little creepy, because we're heading back to where in the previous game you murdered the queen in her castle. And I guess by the time that you get back to her castle, that's all kind of like, it's like made out of muscle and
like
and
hearts, like,
and
really,
yeah, it's meaty, like
sinew. It was pretty gnarly looking, but I really liked it. Like, the deeper, mm-hmm, you got into it, when you really got closer to the queen and it looked like you were wandering around inside like their aorta, like it was just a cool experience for that.
Yeah.
The whole, like, my favorite parts of the levels were the, like, running away from the executioner part. I just thought it was fun. Like, it wasn't difficult. It was just, you run in a straight line.
Wasn't. Yeah.
And then it was just, that character was really cool.
Yeah.
Chasing after you. And then when you
find, by the way, the unique enemies were card based, right?
Yep.
You know, in this level. So he was this big, I think, you know, heart card that was like three times the size of Alice.
Yep. With a scythe. And he was just after. when you finally kill him, though, that was really where my fun began for a little bit more.
Yeah.
You get to eat the cake and become a giant Alice, and at that point, that's where Alice kind of like puts on that, I'm not afraid anymore, like, oh, there's nothing for me to fear because I am three times your size, squishes it.
Yeah.
And then just go on like a Godzilla rampage through like the rest of her city. You're like scooping and flapping and kicking and all these little tiny card people running at you. Yeah, come get some.
I just like for a good chunk. And this was a pretty decently long area where you were getting chased by the executioner, because you'd get chased, you'd kind of whatever, get through a place where he couldn't get to, and there was a bunch of platforming, then you get chased again, right? So it happened multiple times. But yeah, whenever she gets to the middle of the hedgerow maze and she just walks up to the cake that says eat me, and she takes a bite and gets massive, just the look on the executioner's face, because he like looks up, his jaw drops, and then he drops the sides, and it was just like, and she steps on him, he, you know, bloody mess. So but yeah, it was just so much fun rampaging around, like you said, like Godzilla or whatever, just, you know, just smashing cards and walls. And it was definitely a fun part. It was actually, I was talking about how there was those unique, what felt like the third Radula room in each level was always something unique. You went back and you played as Giant Alice in the yep, third. Yep. Yeah. Okay. It was fun. But yeah, it was.
I did get that one. Yeah.
I don't know if this one or the last level were kind of my favorite, but definitely a fun level to go through. Again, just kind of I said, where it's bright and sunny and not necessarily fun, but then by the end you're like in this bloody muscly heart, and you're talking to a queen, the queen of hearts, that is essentially you.
Yep. I think that like the beginning of that was literally playing with cards. Like you were just happy, carefree. Mm-hmm. I don't think you could really die easily. I tried to like miss the cards like in front of, like I tried to do a jump where you land on the card and then hop off, because if you went back far enough, the cards would go back behind you, because it was kind of building the path as you went.
Yep.
And no, it was quick enough to catch me no matter what I tried to do to fool it. So it was really just a nice, like, we're here to help you.
Yep.
Whimsical land. So, and then it just goes to hell. But
yeah. So I think, correct me if I'm wrong, isn't this where we really kind of get who, I think our first hint at the, was it the doll maker?
Yep.
And we kind of really, the queen, who ends up being kind of you, a different kind of more evil side of you. She kind of, this is, I think, where she talks to you and you kind of realize that it was Dr. Bumby that actually started the fire, and he was the one that left your sister Lizzie's room.
Yep.
After some pretty dark stuff.
You kind of get a, yeah, you get a vision of him leaving her room, and like, it, they talk about her like crying out, and it wasn't the sounds you thought they were. Like, I'm pretty sure that dude went in there and did some stuff, you know, some things you probably shouldn't do to other people.
Which, again, is kind of creepy, because in, again, when you're collecting a lot of the memories, you find out that he wasn't Dr. Bumby. He was a student at some college that Alice's dad taught, I think was the dean at, if I remember, or something like that. Somebody something high like up, that, right? Yeah. But he came over a lot, and through a lot of these memories, you find that the Angus Bumby has some kind of creepy infatuation with his
Lizzie,
yeah. Right? And yeah, it was quite a few. It's one of those real creepy, like she was young type thing. And then, yeah, so you get here and you find out that, yeah, something happened in that room. And again, when you, some of the memories early on, you know that your parents died in the fire. You escaped because the cat jumped out the window and you jumped out the window with her. But Lizzie didn't die from the fire, because she was like something like the other end of the house. I don't know. Somehow it didn't catch fire.
So it did catch fire as well, I think it was. But they said that the like reason of death was like asphyxiation, but not smoke inhalation.
Yeah.
So it was like a weird, how did she die? And then Alice puts it together like, well, if I was able to jump out the window with the time I had, she surely could have done the same thing. So clearly she had to have been killed before the fire. Right. And then you realize that, you know, the doctor guy had like her key and locked that room off so that people couldn't go in there to actually check on her, because they would have found her already dead, breaking through the door to like when the mm-hmm. fire hit. So it was pretty screwed pretty up.
Yeah. And it kind of leads into why, again, kind of the motive on why would somebody want to continue to have Alice, or want to have Alice forget what happened at the fire, or let her think there was some centaur and it was her fault, you know? Yep. What was the motive? Who was to gain? And again, you find out, again, this is kind of where Alice starts putting it together, that it was Dr. Bumby, and you know, he, and obviously it was on the start of the game, he's trying to get her to forget these memories from the fire, because he doesn't, we'll get into some more darker stuff for this, but he didn't want her to remember that it was him that went in and started the fire and did something to Lizzie.
I legitimately thought it was like a money thing. I was like, it was, and until that point, I was like, oh, somebody, like their family must have been wealthy. They must have been trying to get the money out of the deal, like the inheritance, because I think there was a guy that was trying to do that. There was like a lawyer or something that was just not on the up and up either.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was a lawyer. I don't remember what his role was, but I immediately thought money.
Let's get into the next part, because I think a lot of those characters we met along the way, the reason they had this, there was a reason they wanted Alice to forget too, is because they participated in the other thing that wasn't money that Dr. Bumby did. But yeah, yep. So the crazy thing here is you come out of Wonderland, you're actually back in the asylum, you're in a straitjacket, your head's shaved, you're losing it again, right? And where the first game was, you were insane for 10 years and then you kind of saved Wonderland and saved your insanity and you got out. You're kind of going back now. You're losing it again, right? That corrupted train is destroying Wonderland, which is also destroying your sanity, and you're kind of slipping back into madness.
That straight jacket that you're wearing looked really good. Like, that just, the costumes for Alice in general were super cool. Like, as they changed from her American McGee look into each of the different levels and the custom costumes that would work out through it.
Yep.
I thought they were just super good.
I was actually going to ask, that was going to be one of my things I was going to ask, if you notice that her dress changed for each level. And what's cool is, if you didn't notice on the main menu, you can actually change your dress. They recommend you, I think there's a note there that says recommend just let the game as you're playing. But if you go back to play it again, or go back to collect some of the collectibles, because you could go through each chapter and their little sub chapters to finish collecting stuff, you could pick one, whichever dress you wanted. And they all had different, I think one was like, oh, you find more teeth, or you get more health, or take less damage, right? So each dress actually, after you beat the game, also has some, it adds to the replay value if you go and replay for any reason. So, but yeah, no, that just design in general, yeah, like you said, the straight jacket, but I really did think it was cool that her dress changed for the weird place the she was in Wonderland.
That was super neat. And they were cool designs, too. I remember specifically looking at the dresses. Be like, oh, that's cool. So
yeah. The
felt fish a little weird, but...
yeah. The fish one and the Queensland one, where it was kind of this... instead of like a red and white checkered, kind of more happier, heart or diamond themed one of cards, it was kind of, it's a darker... it was black and red. It was really cool. But yeah, so she's wandering around the asylum, and this is where you're kind of meeting some characters again, and they're kind of talking to you, and you're kind of, I guess, getting some flashbacks for certain things. Like I said, you run across Tweedledee and Tweedledum. And then the weird, again, is now we're starting to get in the really weird part of the game and the real dark side. I mean, it's already dark in general, but we're starting to discover the doll maker and the purpose of the corrupted train. But like, it was so weird when you're out in a foggy area and there's just street lamps that you're kind of that are lit up, and you're going from one to the other. And then a kid comes crawling towards you, missing it. like from like Saving Private Ryan, just missing the bottom half of it. And it's just, I think if I remember, it was just asking you to like save it, like save us, Alice, or something.
Yep. That's all it was.
And then you take a few steps and there's your house on fire, right? And then I think that's when you kind of get pulled back into Wonderland. But, at this point, I think this level is all about her kind of confronting what she's discovered and then piecing together the last bits. But I really like the kind of messed up side of this, level. It was, a very dark theme to it. Again, once you find out the ending, but just it really leaned into what was the name of the area? The dollhouse.
Yep. So the dollhouse.
Just the whole environment was built up with dollhouses. Not only did you still get the various ruin monsters, the black goo monsters that had like baby faces on it, you started getting, I wrote some of them down. The one was, you already mentioned, was like bitch baby.
The giant doll with the hook hands and like.
And the doll girl. Man. It was just, it was like creepy, so you're just kind of like a porcelain doll that would kind of waddle over to you and try to take a swing at you. And you had to, shoot off its clothes and then its chest and then its heart, which could be some meaning there.
Yeah.
But it was just kind of, I don't even know. It was just, you're just going through these demented dollhouses until you, where was that? Where did that one end up? I'm trying to remember what that,
you
towards
end up
the end
going
of that
through
one.
Like the first area, you end up going into like a teddy bear's, this wasn't a teddy bear, I think it was another doll. You end up going like the front of the, in between of legs of another doll toy. And it brings you into like another area, which felt like a weird butcher's wooden shelves area. Like, I don't know, because there's a lot of spiky walls that, like, slammed shut, yeah, slammed down. And then it was, like, the floor was coated, like, any of the pink-looking floor, if you looked at it, looked like little, like, T-bones, like, just, like, steaks or meat slices all built into, mm-hmm, you know, like, the steps and the spiky areas and things like that, so.
Which could kind of lead into the treating people like meat part, but. Right. But yeah, no, that's right. Yeah, so it's kind of dollhouse area into that kind of darker, yeah, like you said, almost like a butcher, I don't know, evil butcher shop kind of area. And yeah, you're just dodging spikes. Yeah, it was creepy because one area to get from one to the next, like you said, was go between this giant doll's leg, and other ones was through the giant dog's or doll's bum.
Doll's butt. Yeah, that was.
Yeah, and towards the end, or towards the end is kind of when you. Again, the whole idea is to confront the doll maker and get on the train, and you come up to the doll maker, and it's kind of where the real kind of shit hits the fa- you, like, you really find out what was going on. Now, did it kind of surprise you? Like, did this really, did you expect this? I know I know you already said you kind of didn't, but.
No, I really didn't have this idea in my head.
Yeah. So we basically find out the doll maker is Alice's representation in Wonderland of Dr. Angus Bumby. We also find out that Dr. Angus Bumby has been using his little, I already forgot the name, the little kids orphanage, Houndditch home for troubled kids or whatever it was to, and we see some of this at the start of the game, one of the cutscenes where he's trying to help Alice forget, again, for multiple reasons. We find out one of them here, and other kids had daily meetings with him to help them forget. Here he was very creepily kind of brainwashing them to be able to sell them off in to very wealthy people and basically human trade, slave trade of children. Yep. So you, I won't go into too much more there. You kind of get the idea. So
he was helping. He was helping them find new forever homes.
Okay.
Forever homes.
Yes. So yeah, it's funny. And this is the crazy thing for me, and I don't think I've mentioned this yet. I actually played this game. I think it was either 2011 or 2012. It was pretty soon when it came out, and I don't ever remember. Maybe I'm not the smartest guy in the world, but I don't ever remember putting that together way back 10 years ago. I don't know, maybe I was just not paying attention to the story or something, right? So for me, even though this is the second time I've played this game, it was a surprise to me. And I was like, shit, this is dark. This is very dark. Yeah, so it was just...
all their pretty little name tags. And
yeah, so it was very creepy, but you kind of finish out the level again, kind of some weird... tries to make you a doll, but that's where you end up. The game also had some we haven't mentioned a lot, these kind of almost slides that you'd go down through sometimes, mm-hmm, for parts of level. And in the kind of unique gameplay of this one was you were a doll head that kind of, again, kind of a side scroller type thing where you had Donkey Kong barrel around and roll around to,
yeah, you had to roll through the different areas, and I actually got stuck a couple times in, mm-hmm, the areas with like the arrows. Like, because, yeah, you couldn't jump as a baby head. You were just rolling around. But you also, like, if you didn't adjust your, like, velocity as you're going forward, like, to pull back in certain spots to use the ramps properly, you'd, like, bounce, and it would kill all of your momentum. And it was, mm-hmm, it was just really interesting because you couldn't just go with the flow. You had to, like, alter reality and, like, your inertia to match certain, you know, patterns of the level layout. As cool as it was, I got pretty frustrated with the one with the cannons. I was like, just get in the damn space.
Yeah, some of the physics in the later, because you did again, like, I think 3 or 4 times this stuff with the doll head, and yeah, some of the mechanics and physics were a little off. I definitely got frustrated, I think, on one of the later ones, but yeah. So that was kind of that level. And as normal, this was kind of not as normal, because now once you finish the level And again, you've put everything together. Now it's time to kind of confront Dr. Angus Bumby. This is where Alice is going to confront her, whatever, ghosts of her past, her problems and stuff. And the interesting thing here, I thought, was that now we're starting to see, because she ends up getting on the infernal train. And as she's, there was kind of these, you were bouncing back and forth and finding out that, like, really Alice's or the Wonderland and London were kind of slowly coming together a little bit more, because you would,
right,
you'd be on the train, you'd be walking through it. Really, you kind of meet just some of the characters and they kind of, you know, give you some talks as you're going. And then you'd bounce out and you've confronted Dr. Angus in front of a train station, and he's waiting for his next, I believe, Alice type helper to come in, somebody that would help with the kids and that he could probably abuse or brainwash too. But yeah, you get to the end, which is fighting the doll maker, which was probably the most frustrating. Like, all the other parts we've talked about were frustrating, but this one I found was more frustrating. I mean, some of it was a boss battle, so it was supposed to be tough.
This is where I found out the thing that made me the angriest in this game. What I didn't realize is that you could actively control where you teleported when you hit the thing and you could move a direction. I almost always hit that, like, teleport move when I was, like, aiming on something. So when I was locked on a target. So it would just, I was always frustrated. I was like, why? Why are you taking me closer? Why are you bringing me here? Like, yeah. I'm trying to go elsewhere. But if you just let go of targeting and you press that button in a direction and you just go. Mm-hmm. I fought that stupid set of hands like 6 times before I figured that out. And I just could not get away from, you know, you do that little crawly thing. I just could not get away from it. It didn't matter. I was like, this is an automatic kill. What am I supposed to do? And then accidentally found out I can change my direction. So mad.
Yeah.
It's like, end of the game, and this is when I find it.
My struggle came with, so, like, you have this, again, doll maker. He's larger than you. So was it, he has his 2 hands that come out, and you got to fight his hands. They have baby faces on him. And when you do enough damage, whenever you do enough damage to him, he drops his gross tongue out, which has some baby faces on it. And the idea is to destroy, I think there's 3 or 4 baby faces on his tongue. My frustration came was they had these, as we said, for the most part, helpful checkpoints. And I guess you could argue it was helpful. I want to say it was like kind of a 2-stage fight, if I remember.
Yeah.
And it checkpoints. The only problem is, like, none of the enemies drop health. So, like, I was pretty much down to, like, oh, I forget, 1 or 2 roses, not a lot, when it was checkpointed. And
What difficulty did you play it on?
Normal.
Okay, so I got hearts from those guys. Like, the chaff that spawned.
Yeah. The weird baby floating things in the second phase, I didn't always get roses from them.
No, not always, but it was occasional.
Yeah. But the thing that kind of annoyed me, again, it was a lot of it was timing and kind of figuring out the mechanics. But what I hated sometimes about some of the various monsters, a lot of times the ruin ones were, especially these floating baby ones, it's like, I want to take them out so I can only focus. So I only have to focus on the hands. But the way those floaty things worked is you couldn't always do damage to them until they did this weird animation and their baby face came out of their stuff. Yep. Then you would hit them. So they're shooting at me. I'm trying to dodge these hands. And I think at that point was I don't think the doll maker was attacking you any. Was he? I don't remember.
It was just the 2 hands and the little things. But
yeah.
Did you know that the teapot would 2-shot kill those floaty blobs of baby faces? So if you hit it once with the teapot, it would bring the face out right away.
Then
you could pop a second shot into it. And you'd hit in the face and it would die. You didn't have to charge it either. On normal, anyways.
Okay. No, I didn't know that.
2 teapot shots and it would clear them.
Look at you finding these cool ways to defeat the big colossal ruins and the floaty baby faces. What are those? Let's see, I wrote them down.
Floaty bitch babies, weren't they? No, that was the...
Were they the menacing... That was the
helicopter ones.
No.
I don't remember their name, but...
Maybe I didn't write it down. I don't know. Anyways... But yeah, no, it's, but you end up defeating the doll maker, which stops the train, which again, kind of, I guess, maybe, you, well, I guess it's a question if, or think even Cheshire Cat says, you know, your kind of worlds are combined at this point. So maybe you're a little crazy still, but you come back out in the real world and you get that weird, again, that blending, which seemed to be Dr. Angus Bumby seemed to notice, because once you defeat him in the game, then out in London, she's wearing her Alice costume, not just the whatever normal basic dress that she wore in.
She's wearing her like ragged dress, like that stripy London dress to start with. And then he makes a comment, like after you beat it, he makes some comment about, you know, what are you going to do about it? Like, I did all this shit. No one's going to stop me. What are you going to do? And that's when she like turns around, and then she turns around again, and she's wearing the blue Alice dress, and he sees it now. He lights up like, what? Mm-hmm. And then he gets shoved in front of a train.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's right. You're right, because she was like, because she found all the creepy stuff that he was doing and confronted him about what happened the night of the fire and all that stuff. Yep. And she's like, I'll go to the police. And he's like, yeah, who's going to believe you? You're insane psychotic girl. That's yeah. So she just shoves him in front of the train.
Who would you believe? I believe the train, bitch. Yeah.
But I think, yeah, and she ends up walking out of the train tunnel, and we find that London has kind of fully merged with Wonderland, I guess, yep, kind of. So they're, I forget what Cheshire Cat said, but it was something about like they can't be separated now or something like that. You know, they're together or whatever, the London and a reality and Wonderland. But yeah, it's a crazy game. Yeah,
it's. I'm happy that it all tied into itself. Like once you finally started to figure out what was going on, because mm-hmm. I was like, is this just Murder Town Wonderland? Like, is that all I'm doing? What are these baby face things? What is this? And not having, I recommend if you are going to. Again, I don't know if that's a spoiler though. If you're planning on playing this game, we've done some spoilers here, per usual.
Book I don't clubs think I
come
warned
with spoilers. We'll have to have Dan edit something in where it's like, warning, spoilers ahead. Cut that out and put it in front, right? So basically, you know, if you're gonna play it and you're not gonna play the first one, at least watch a video of what happened in the first one. I don't know if you need to look at the boss fights and like what all happened there, but just understanding some of that, like the house fire thing, would have probably helped me a little bit in the early context of this game to understand, you know, what had happened. Because you, in the first one, you kind of wake up as Alice in the asylum to start with, I believe. The house fires happened.
Yeah, but I think in the first game, kind of the unique thing was they really only focused on what was the cat that started the fire, right?
Yep, they don't tell you.
Think you don't get a lot of the other stuff until this game. I think the big thing is just to kind of know, yeah, some of that just kind of backstory and how it connects the through the looking glass to the Alice Madness Returns. And that, like, basically the Red Queen ended up being kind of a version of yourself that you needed to defeat to gain your sanity back. I'd say that might be the more kind of important thing. A lot of the little throwbacks, like I said, like running across the Jabberwocky at the start, the different characters, like the fact that the Mad Hatter's in pieces because you fought him early on or as a boss in the other other game and things like that. So that was kind of you know, fun. But yeah, definitely probably maybe go hop on YouTube and do a America McGee's Alice story. I think I did, and there was like a 20 or 30 minute video that I watched that kind of
There's like a 25 minute video that goes from like Alice in Wonderland, Looking Glass, and then America McGee, and it goes into Madness. But I would just stop at the Madness point and start your playthrough there.
Yep. One thing I wanted to throw out there, I guess, before we kind of start scoring it or whatever, or giving our final thoughts, is I did really enjoy the music. I don't know if you kind of thought the same. I felt it was kind of this weird mix of horror and fairy tale in a lot of the levels. It was dark, but there was a little kind of fairy tale feel to it. It was kind of, again, kind of added to it the themes of the level.
Like a playful dark. Like it was really neat. I did enjoy the sound. I don't usually notice the soundtrack in games. For whatever reason, I'm just not like the biggest music dude, but I did notice it in this one, and it did set the theme, and it was, you know, I think they just paired the art style, kind of like what you're saying. They paired the art style so well with the sound behind it. Like the art side of this game just really, really stood out. So,
So what are your final thoughts? Do you recommend people play this, or do you hate it?
Yeah, I think if you have time, go play it. I don't think it was like blow you away the best horror type game you'll play, but if you're just in the mood for something kind of weird, and not too terribly long, level three, like I sent you that message, like level three got really long,
but it did.
You know, just absolutely go into it knowing, you know, there's some parts that are gonna be a little bit slower. It's a lot of platforming, but in the end, like the overall journey was great. I would have rather played this artsy journey than the journey that we played where we spent an hour and a half walking through sand and snow. So,
yeah.
Not that was a bad game either, but
we got a little bit of snow in this one. Did we hit sand? I don't think we ever came across like a sand area.
It was kind of more like
the Mad Hatter,
or like wasn't necessarily sandy. It was more like cliffs, canyony type.
Yeah, but it wasn't like desert sand, but yeah. Right. No, I really enjoyed this. Obviously, as we mentioned, the kind of the camera and the jumping were a little wonky. But I think overall, the creativeness of the levels, the enemies, the story were good enough that I stopped thinking about those things until like I died or they caused me to lose a lot of life, right?
Right.
And it was like, screw you, camera.
But yeah, I was just going to agree with you. Go ahead.
I was waiting for you. But yeah, no, I mean, I would definitely, you know, I wouldn't say like run out and play this now. But if you want to, I think this was one of our longer book clubs, I think was 10 to 14 hours. Probably. I never looked to see how long my playthrough was, but it was a little longer than normal. But it was definitely fun. It was worth it. And I mentioned, I think that it was like, it's roughly $20, but again, if you have Game Pass Ultimate, it you know, and you're just looking for a fun platformer with a very unique art style, music and storytelling, I mean, go download it. It's free. You can, and it's PC Game Pass and Xbox Game Pass too. So all you PC elitists can play it as well.
And if it turns out you don't like it, it's not, you know, you just stop, right? Like, it's not something that you're going to be like, oh, I'm going to miss out if I don't play it.
Yeah, especially if you listen to our whole episode here, where I did not warn for spoilers.
Hey, we got that covered. We'll fix it in post. That's how this works. Yeah.
Plus, if you're a returning listener, you know how these book club goes. But
you're going to get a bunch of hate comments like, this son of a bitch. Well, it's book club. It's book club. We're talking about it. Yeah. So I feel like book club in the name just gives you that spoilers ahead.
Perfect. Yep. Cool. Well, I think that kind of ties up our I guess, review or chat about Alice Madness Returns. I guess we're to the point of the episode where we'll announce next month, June's book club game. Will be Little Nightmares. We want to pick something a little shorter. As we mentioned, Rich was kind of busy. He might be busy for a little while. Plus, we got, well, it's not E3. It's canceled, but kind of a couple shows coming up that we'll probably be covering those. So we want to kind of pick something a little bit shorter. I think that clocks in around 4 hours, but I think we're going to have a lot of fun with it. And I'm hopefully, Mike, you'll return again soon. Maybe chat with us about Little Nightmares or on another episode.
Yeah, we'll see. I definitely am, you know, wanting to be here for these, but don't have babies. They just ruin your dreams. You're like, I want to do this thing. And then they're like, but I want to eat. And you're like, oh, all right, I suppose, you know.
Yeah.
So having a few of them, it takes up a bunch of time. But I will likely be here for Little Nightmares, if you like the sound of my voice. Be ready for that.
So I already picked it up. I'm ready to play it. So let's. I think they said if you speed through it, you can get through it in 2.5 hours, but I'm not going to try and just rush it.
Yeah, no, I you know me. I always take a little longer with the book club games because I'll do things like the collectibles. I should go see how long Alice took me, but
it's really because you get stuck and need the Prima guide to get you through. We know.
Yep. Got to have that Prima guide up all the time. But all right. Well, thanks for listening. Be sure to check out our website, campfiregamingpodcast.com. Again, you can find links to our Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, link to join our Discord server. Come chat with us. Come share your thoughts, whether you liked or didn't like American Alice. It is American McGee's Alice Madness Returns. He does. But yeah, Alice Madness Returns. Feel free to come share your thoughts. Be sure to also jump in there and you give us some book club suggestions. You know, we do to pick community games from time to time. You know, whenever you guys suggested to us and they're on Game Pass or they're not, what is it? We had some people suggest games that are like 30 years old and it's like, how are we going to play that? You know, I guess I'll go try to find the PlayStation copy of it. But yeah.
And it cost us $80 to buy the PlayStation copy because of how rare the game is now.
And then we need a PlayStation or a PlayStation 2 that'll run it. Yeah. It's just...
We need 4 copies of the game. And
mm-hmm. Well, thanks again for joining, Mike. It was good to have you back. Hopefully we have you again in the future.
Looking forward to it.
Yep. And until next time.
I feel like I have to keep interrupting you on these because I remember... Yeah. You know, every one of these, like, cool intro, cool outro. Let's just poke in there. Sorry, go ahead.
You miss me interrupting you when you're trying to intro and outro. Until next time, we'll see you around the campfire.